The role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons was first released in 1974, and it remains a relevant part of American culture today. What is it about this game that gives it its staying power? Katie Sewell spoke with journalist David Ewalt, author of the new book Of Dice and Men, the story of Dungeons & Dragons and the people who play it. Katie asked David Ewalt how he got involved with D&D.
I started playing Dungeons & Dragons when I was about 10 years old. I was hanging out at a friend's house, and we were, you know, doing normal 10-year-old boy stuff, running around and breaking things mostly. And at some point, he broke out this weird box with a picture of a dragon on the front of it. And he said, "Hey, do you guys want to play this game that I found?" And we were a little skeptical, but once we started playing it, we were immediately entranced. It was just really cool to project yourself into this fantasy world. And also to realize that the possibilities were really endless. Like, it was a game where you could do anything.
And why did you pick it back up again as an adult?
Well, I didn't play the game for a long time. I went decades without playing D&D. And then I started working as a reporter. I started writing about technology for Forbes magazine and about the games industry. And as part of getting to know the beat, I would talk to people who made games for a living. And I asked them, "Well, why did you decide you wanted to make games for a living?" And over again, the answer I heard from them was, "Oh, because I played a lot of Dungeons and Dragons when I was a kid." So I knew there was something there. I knew it was more than just a fun game I played as a kid, that it really had a profound influence on American business and culture, and I wanted to find out why. That's why I picked it up again. I also had some nostalgia for it. I remembered how fun the game was and wanted to play again, because I missed that sort of element of fantasy in my life. But it was also because I realized, like, this is a story. Like, there's something more here, and this game has not gotten the attention and the recognition that it deserves.
Well, when you create a character on Dungeons & Dragons, you do it by rolling a die. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you end up with a character that's not so great. You know?
That's right.
I remember playing as a young person myself, and I had a thief that couldn't steal anything successfully, and all I could do was climb walls with a 90% efficiency. What is the worst character you remember having?
You know, the fact that there's this element of randomness to the game is what makes it fun. I mean, sometimes the best characters are the ones where, you know, where you have a fighter who can't fight or a thief who can't steal. The character I play in the book is a cleric. He's, you know, a magician who basically casts healing magic. But the way I've designed the character, like, he's very much like a fighter. Like, he gets in the battle and he takes the blows. So he's really bad at a lot of cleric stuff, you know, when he's actually needed. I remember a character I made when I was a kid who was a ninja. And he had no strength and no constitution. He was just a terrible warrior. He was great at hiding, but you could basically hit him with a pebble and he would just curl up and die.
Well, see, that's what one of the things I find interesting about the game is that you remember the characters as if they were characters you read about in a book, or the adventures you went on as if it's something that actually happened to you.
Yeah, because in a very real sense, these things did happen to you. It's not like Monopoly where, okay, I'm the thimble for this game, and then that's just a stand-in. In Dungeons & Dragons, you're becoming that character. Like, you're putting motivation and emotion and intent into that piece of paper. And so you start to relate with it, and it means something to you. And so when you leave the game, you remember that character because you were playing that person for a while. There's a connection there.
There's a lot of stereotypes about what kind of people like role-playing games. What has been your experience in your investigation into Dungeons & Dragons? Who's drawn to it?
Well, the stereotypes have some truth in that, you know, a lot of kids who are kind of geeky, who, you know, are attracted to things like mathematics and logic and fantasy fiction, those kids are drawn to this game for obvious reasons. The game also draws in a lot of kids who are sort of schoolyard outcasts, because it's very welcoming, because, you know, you always want more players at the table. So a kid who might not feel welcomed, you know, on the football squad or hanging out with other kids in the lunchroom is going to find welcome at this gaming table. And there's also a great social element to it, that if you do have a hard time making friends, this is a great mechanism for, well, I can sit down at this table and instead of trying to make small talk and figure out how to navigate this social minefield, we're going to play the game, and that's how we're going to get to know each other. But even though the, you know, the stereotypes have some truth to them, this game is played by people of all ages, male and female, young and old, and especially as time has passed, the audience for Dungeons & Dragons is huge. It's everybody. And as more people become gamers, as more people play video games on their phones, on their tablets, more and more people are finding their way into this kind of gaming, too.
I'm speaking with David Ewalt. He is an award-winning journalist who writes about games for Forbes magazine. And we're talking about his new book, Of Dice and Men, The Story of Dungeons and Dragons and the People Who Play It. Now, I can remember the panic of the 1980s about Dungeons and Dragons when people were starting to say that it was satanic. They kept linking suicides to people who played Dungeons and Dragons. Why do you think all that hysteria happened?
Well, most of the hysteria can be traced to a young kid named James Dallas Egbert. He was a genius. He was a young kid who was exceptionally smart. He graduated from high school really early, went to college at a very young age. But like, you know, other genius kids, he was alienated from other kids his age. He didn't have a lot of friends. He had difficulty making friends, and he was depressed a lot. He suffered from emotional problems. When he went off to college, he discovered D&D, and he actually started making some friends on campus who were the kids who played these games. But then he had an emotional breakdown. He ran away from school. And when his parents and law enforcement officials went to his dorm room to try to figure out, well, what happened? Where did he go? They found these weird books with pictures of demons and dragons. And this is a new game. No one had ever seen anything like this before. So they jumped to the conclusion that the game was responsible, that this weird demonic thing had driven this kid to run around in the steam tunnels underneath his college, and that he'd either been killed by another player or that he was lost somewhere. And this became national news. Very, very quickly, Dungeons and Dragons was known nationally as, oh, this is a dangerous game. This is a corrupter of youth. It was all nonsense, but the idea stuck. It was an easy story to tell.
Have you seen any ripples like that in later fantasy games or the similar panic in our culture, like Dungeons and Dragons experienced?
This kind of panic happens, seems to happen every couple of years in American culture. After Dungeons and Dragons, and around the same time, the same thing happened with heavy metal music. Oh, that's satanic. That's going to drive your kids to the devil. A few years later, people said the same thing about video games. And actually, that story is coming back again in the last few years. Now we're so worried about these violent video games and are going to drive your kids out to shoot up a bank or drive over a prostitute. And it's ridiculous. You know, games don't actually cause people to do that. But these hysterias seem to come and go pretty quickly in American culture.
And it was good for business when it came to Dungeons & Dragons.
Before this event with Egbert's disappearance, Dungeons & Dragons was very popular, but only among this niche group of college students and war gamers, you know, really hardcore gaming guys. After Egbert's disappearance became national news, the game exploded. It was the best press they ever could have asked for. Because kids everywhere, when they heard, oh, really? There's this game that's satanic? I want to play that. So the game exploded. It went all over the country. It became the biggest game in the world for a couple years there and still remains extremely popular around the world.
Looking beyond the game, where do you see it influencing our culture?
One of the big ways that D&D has influenced modern culture is because the way the game is formatted, it's really about telling a story. And there's one player, the Dungeon Master, who kind of is directing the entire story. He's coming up with the main narrative and helping push the other players through it. So many people who are creative content people in the 21st century look back to the 80s and 90s and say, you know, that's where I learned how to tell a story. I mean, it's guys like Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man. He says that playing D&D, that's what taught him. These are the fundamentals of storytelling and of drama, and that's what helped make him a successful director. You see that with a lot of novelists, with a lot of filmmakers. Dungeons & Dragons also had a really big influence on the modern video game industry. So many people played this game when they were a kid, and it made them fall in love with games, and it made them say, you know what, I want to make games for a living. And now the video game industry is almost a $70 billion global industry. It's huge. It's getting bigger than movies, music worldwide. It's massive. And D&D is the direct ancestor of those things.
So since you spend much of your time playing and telling these stories and living these stories, I guess, would you say that your life is more magical than other people's lives?
I think so. I mean, that's the fun thing about Dungeons & Dragons is that it's not just that you're sampling a fantasy world. I mean, it's lots of people like watching Game of Thrones on television or like reading fantasy books. They like reading Harry Potter because you get a taste of something outside of your mortal existence. But this is going even further beyond that. You're projecting yourself into the player and you're really experiencing that. You're getting this this taste of the sublime, and it's firsthand. You're experiencing what it's like to be a hero, and I think it means a lot to people, and it's a great escape. It's valuable.
That's journalist David Ewalt. He spoke to Katie Sewell about his new book, Of Dice and Men, the story of Dungeons and Dragons and the people who play it. Now, if that sounds fun to you and you'd like to get involved in a game, you can search on Craigslist or find a weekly game night location through Wizards of the Coast. This is The Record.